Blog Talk Radio.
Howdy, welcome to Home-Based Business 101. My name is Isaiah. I have the pleasure of introducing the host. You know him. He's everybody's hero, my best friend. Will you please join me in welcoming my granddaddy, Baba Jahi?
Well, good afternoon, good Wednesday afternoon, as some people refer to as Hump Day. This is a new program we have starting this Wednesday. We will be going over books, and we will go through an entire book and then get to another book. And today we're going to start with Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice by Dennis Kimbrough and Napoleon Hill. I've had a chance to meet Mr. Kimbrough on several occasions, and he shared, you know, what it took for him to be able to write this book. This wasn't the book that he wanted to write at the time. There's another book that he wanted to write that he did write afterwards, What Makes the Great Great. But he was given an assignment and through W. Clifford Stone to complete Napoleon Hill's manuscript on achievement for Black America. And so he took that manuscript and then with his own research built upon that to write this book, Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice. So it is that. It is a choice. And a lot of people will tell you, you know, you shouldn't make those kind of choices. You shouldn't be looking at wealth. Well, you know, we have wealth disparities in this country, and we as African Americans need to definitely look at ways to be able to obtain wealth. So any books that help us with that type of mindset is a great book. So let's dive on in here. We're going to do it today. We look forward to getting through the foreword and the introduction, and then we should be able to do chapter one next week. Okay, the foreword to this book was written by wildly famous Amos. Some of you might remember him as the Cookie Man. And anyway, he wrote the introduction, and it's, I mean the foreword. And here, let's get started here. These are the words of wildly famous Amos. You are about to embark on a transformational experience. The information and ideas contained in this very special book will actually change your belief system. Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice was written with the hope of giving you another way of looking at your world. It is a book filled with real-life positive examples of high achievers. It is written in basic English and packed with emotion. You will see your reflection in many of the stories told. The success stories in this book are actually every person's success story. They are founded in the universal law and principle, which shows no regard for color, race, or cultural differences. They work for everyone. However, there's one catch. They work only if you work them. You must believe and use the principles daily. Not just every now and then. Just as food will nourish and strengthen your body only when eaten, the ideas and concepts shared in this book will work only when applied in practice. So make a commitment that this will not be like so many other projects you have begun and failed to complete. This time will be different. You're going to create a new and improved you. Let's give this project a name, so it will have real meaning. Let's call it Operation New Life. Can you think of a more worthwhile project? I know I can't. You deserve to be the best you possible. Before you get started, a word of caution. This is not a read it once and put it on the shelf book. Read it before going to bed at night. Read it as soon as you wake in the morning. Take it to your place of business, on trips to the bathroom. Because Thinking for Rich, A Black Choice was meant to be studied and put into practice, practice, practice. So turn the page and get started on the greatest journey of your life, Operation New Life. I look forward to meeting you, the brand new you. Have a great life. Aloha, Wally Amos. So we can see a very profound foreword written by Wally Amos in terms of talking about Operation New Life. Okay, let's get in, dive here into the introduction. Hopefully we'll get through the introduction today and then be able to get into chapter one next week. All right, here we go. The introduction to Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice. Starts off with a Talmudic philosopher's quote. The noblest charity is to prevent a man from accepting charity, and the best alms is to show and enable a man to dispense with alms. So it's best to have a person in a situation where they don't need charity. They don't need a handout, just a hand. Black Americans who seek a way to abandon a mediocrity life, a start on a grand highway to success, here is your roadmap. This map is not new. It was developed just after the Civil War in the form of a lecture entitled Acres of Diamonds by a lawyer and newspaper editor named Russell H. Conwell. In 1881, Dr. Conwell also became a minister, and it was in this role that he developed his talk, which he delivered some 8,000 times to audiences across the country. These appearances earned him nearly $8 million in lecture fees, which he used to found Temple University in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to serve poor but deserving young men. Acres of Diamonds was the true story of a poor farmer who settled in Africa, spent years struggling to raise his crops. His land was rocky and difficult to till. Disenfranchised with his circumstances, the farmer became increasingly fascinated by tales of easy wealth gained by men who had secured for and discovered diamonds in the countryside. He, too, wanted to be rich. He grew tired of the endless labor and impulsively sold his farm to search for diamonds. For the rest of his life, he wandered the vast African continent searching for the gleaming gems. But the great discovery always eluded him. Finally, in a fit of despondency, broken financially, spiritually, and emotionally, he threw himself into the river and drowned. Meanwhile, the man who brought his farm found a rather large and unusual stone in the stream that cut through his property. It turned out to be a diamond of enormous value. Stunned by his newfound wealth, the farmer discovered that his land was virtually covered with such stones. It was to become one of the world's richest diamond mines. Now, the first farmer had unknowingly owned acres of diamonds. He sold the property for practically nothing in order to look for riches elsewhere. If only he had taken the time to study and realize what diamonds looked like in their rough state and had explored the land he had owned, he would have found the riches he sought on the very land he had been living upon. What so profoundly affected Dr. Conwell and subsequently thousands of others who heard this lecture was the fact that each of us, at any given moment, is standing in the middle of his or her own acres of diamonds. If only we acquired the wisdom and patience to intelligently and effectively examine our circumstances and to explore the world in which we are now engaged, we usually will find that it contains the riches we seek, whether they be materially, spiritually, or both. Before we go running off to what we think are greener pastures, let's make sure that our own is not just as green or perhaps even greener. Times while we're looking at other pastures, other people are busy looking at ours. There's nothing more pitiful than a person who wastes his or her life wandering from one thing to another, like the imprudent seeker of diamonds, forever looking for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow and never staying with one thing long enough to find it. For no matter what your goal may be or whatever form your riches may take, you can be sure that your start on the road to its attainment can be found somewhere within your present surroundings. Men and women who have become outstanding at their work are those who view their endeavors as an opportunity for growth and development. They have prepared themselves for the opportunities that surround them every day. James Brainerd Matthews, 18th century writer, observed, "Unless a man has trained himself for his chance, the chance will only make him look ridiculous. A great occasion is worth to a man exactly what his preparation enables him to make of it." Preparation is the key. It means becoming so good, so competent at what you're doing that you actually force the opportunity you seek to come your way, and come your way it will. I'm going to read that sentence again. Preparation is the key. It means becoming so good, so competent at what you're doing that you actually force the opportunity you seek to come your way, and come your way it will. Today, Black America stands in the spotlight. Strong winds, strong tides, strong minds, strong destinies are gathering to sweep the race into new directions, new actions, and new possibilities. Opportunities bound the world to judge our salutation of ourselves, to see what we do with those opportunities that have escaped our grasp for so many years. The door has now opened, and the freedom to walk through it is ours. But the freedom to do what? Freedom to define whatever you demand from life and what you expect to give in return. Freedom is yours. You have the spiritual, legal, and social right to be or not to be. Only one out of every 17 human beings on earth is blessed with this freedom that so many seem to take for granted. To progress and find your way to success is the debt you owe to life. Freedom is yours. Though you may march in unison with your brother, each of you must step to your own cadence. You may reason together, but the product of that reasoning is the consortium of individual thought. You may love your fellow man, but you can neither breathe for him nor match the beat of his heart to your own. This book is about Black America and success, but the concepts it articulates are applicable to all who dwell on this earth. Conscious power exists within the mind of everyone. Too often it goes unrecognized, but it is there. It is there to be developed and brought forward, like the great oak born out of the acorn, or like the achiever who has risen above obstacles of purposelessness and low self-esteem. Within you lies a power which, when properly grasped and directed, can lift an entire race out of the rut of mediocrity, poverty, and failure, and onto the shores of fortune. The key words in this context are grasped and directed. Let me offer an illustration. William Marston, a prominent psychologist, authored a 2-year study where he asked 3,000 individuals the following: what have you to live for? What Dr. Marston found was absolutely shocking. He discovered that 94% of those interviewed had no definite purpose. They were men and women who were simply enduring the present while they waited for the future. They waited for something to happen, wait for tomorrow, wait for the next year, wait for their children to grow up, leave home, wait for something, for someone to die. 94%, overwhelming majority, were men and women who were simply enduring the present while they waited for more favorable circumstances. This doesn't make sense when you're talking to free human beings who are living in the most exciting age in the history of mankind. We should realize that the only time that exists is the here and now. Yesterday is gone forever, and tomorrow never really comes. Those who wait for things to happen or for something to turn up never learn the rules of the most exciting and rewarding game on earth, the game of life. Thomas Huxley, a 19th century scientist and philosopher, noted the following: suppose it were perfectly certain that the life and fortune of each of us would someday depend upon our winning or losing a game of chess. Do you not think that we should all consider it to be our primary duty to learn at least the names of the pieces and how to position them on the chessboard? Yet it is a plain and elementary truth that the life, the fortune, and the happiness of each of us depends upon knowing something of the rules of the game more difficult, far interesting, and much more exciting than chess. Here's a game that has been played for untold ages. Each of us is one of two players in the game of his or her own. The chessboard is our world. The pieces are the phenomena of the universe, the rules of the game, or what we call the laws of nature. Now, the player on the other side, our opponent, is hidden from us. We realize that his play is always fair, just impatient. But also we learn to our cost that we never overlook a mistake. But he never overlooks a mistake and makes the smallest allowance for ignorance. He cannot favor anyone, but everyone has the same opportunity to win. To the man who plays well, the high stakes are paid with. That sort of overwhelming generosity with which the strong show delight and strength, and one who plays poorly is checkmated with haste, but without remorse. Huxley went on to say that those who take honors in nature's universe, who learn the laws that govern men and women and things and obey them, are really the great and successful people in this world. The masses of humankind or the average who pick up just enough to get through without much discredit. Yes, it is plain and elementary truth that the life, the fortune, and the happiness of each of us depends on knowing something of the rules of the game. It is a game that our Creator allows us to play just once, and there is no second chance should we play poorly. It becomes important that we know the rules that we ultimately determine our success, not just to know their meaning and what they do, but to make these principles a part of us, a habit that will lead us to do the right thing automatically, regardless of the circumstances. Then we would know that we need not wait for some distant opportunity to arrive. He who does can make no greater mistake, for no man or woman can become successful without enriching the lives of others. Anyone who adds to prosperity must prosper in return. Pause here for a second. And I'm going to come back to reading the rest part of this introduction. Just want to take a break here for a second, catch my breath. And I hope that this is being real helpful for people as we're going through this book. And so far, the first part of this introduction. Okay, the next part of the introduction. The world is yours when you master the secret. Napoleon Hill devoted his life to sharing the philosophy of individual achievement with millions of men and women. Born in poverty, he had carved out a distinguished writing career, became a confidant of many successful leaders in the 20th century, and served as an advisor to President Woodrow Wilson and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. As a novice writer, Hill interviewed Andrew Carnegie, the multimillionaire steelmaker. During their three-hour meeting, Carnegie shared with Hill his grand idea to develop and organize the world's first philosophy of individual achievement based on the success principles that Carnegie had used to accumulate his vast fortune. Fast approaching the end of an illustrious career, Carnegie lamented, "It's a shame that each new generation must find a way to success by trial and error when the principles are really clear-cut." After elaborating his beliefs, the tycoon put the question squarely to this young guest. "If you were given an opportunity to spend 20 years interviewing the most accomplished and wealthiest men and women of your day, probing their success thoroughly for the secrets of their success, would you undertake the venture?" Without hesitation, the young journalist and faculty said, "Yes, Napoleon Hill has seized his moment." Unknowing to Hill, Carnegie had allowed the reporter 60 seconds in which to make up his mind. In 29 seconds, Hill said that he would begin the job and complete it. Later, Hill learned that the great industrialist had a stopwatch in his hand, timing his answer. Had his deliberation exceeded the allotted minute, Hill would have lost his chance. Carnegie had learned from his observation of men that those who are slow to make up their minds are equal to as slow as to carry out their decisions. So don't be slow to making up your mind. Carnegie provided Hill with no subsidiary for his effort except to provide letters of introduction and pay his expenses while he interviewed men such as Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, John D. Rockefeller, John Wanamaker, F.W. Woolworth, Alexander Graham Bell. Carnegie explained that he wished to make sure that Hill learned to apply the philosophy he was to organize, thus providing its soundness by its own accomplishments. In 1928, exactly 20 years after the fateful meeting, Hill published a highly influential book, Laws of Success, in which he revealed all he had learned. 9 years later, he'll publish Think and Grow Rich, a classic that sold more than 10 million copies. Far from being a get-rich-quick manual, Think and Grow Rich distills the essence of success system of those whom he has studied. At the book's core rests the conviction he'll absorb from his mentor. The individual must control his deepest perception of himself, lest he be overwhelmed by the forces of negativism and defeat in those around him. In Think and Grow Rich, Hill demonstrated his genius by motivating others, which would become the hallmark of his subsequent books. Black America Must Discover the Secret. Prior to his death in 1970, Hill wrote a manuscript specifically aimed at Black America. Unfortunately, the manuscript was never published. However, it was preserved by the foundation that bears Hill's name and made available to me, a young, unknown Black writer. Crux of Hill's ideas are the underpinnings of this book. It is my goal to capture Hill's motivating and inspirational style as I urge potential Black achievers who possess the drive and initiative to uncover the secrets of success and follow Hill's decorum to the letter. Today, at this very moment, in every part of the country, there are Black men and women, as well as members of other minority groups, who wonder what they can do to realize their goals and advance some shining idea. You and I are no exception. We have the same opportunities that all possess, regardless of race, creed, or social status, to succeed or fail in a land of unlimited riches. Others before us have brought their desires and visions to the doorsteps of reality. Whether we do too and cross the threshold of achievement depends totally on one person, the one whom each of us sees in the mirror. Why do some men and women fail while others succeed? Why do some wallow in the mirror of poverty and backwardness while others enjoy success and prosperity? Why does one man live in a loving, caring home and another drag out a mere existence in a slum? And why is one man popular and respected and another disliked and ignored? This book will help clarify your thinking as you search for answers. Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice, began several years before I came upon Hill's accomplishment, Work on Success. The underlying theme was etched into my subconscious during my many years of research while interviewing dozens of the most powerful Black men and women in America. Those high achievers offered me an opportunity to observe them at a close range. I saw them reveal their traits, both good and bad. I discovered and analyzed their accomplishments and setbacks and success and failures. During my doctoral studies at Northwest University, I learned that much of what is believed about race and ethnicity is based on repetition rather than fact. It would be a life's work to disentangle the myths, misconceptions, and half-truths that cloud the process of goal-seeking as it pertains to ethnic or Black experience in America. What is often viewed as unique and peculiar experiences turns out to be not so unique as once imagined. The great mindless idea of our time is that success is only obtainable by those of the right color, right background, or right class. Why does one man fail when another succeeds? This answer is tremendous concern to all mankind, especially those carving a tunnel of hope where no hope exists. Understanding Black America. Black America requires special understanding. It embraces more than 30 million, at that time it was 30 million, I think it's 50 million people now, men, women, and children. It is becoming increasingly younger and more concentrated in urban areas. While it shares many of the concerns so common to American society as a whole, a decent education, a worthwhile career, an opportunity to build or share in an enterprise for one's future, the ring of a strong, healthy family, and retirement and comfort and dignity, Black America has its own special set of concerns which exert a powerful influence and determine the quality of its life. For instance, there are concerns about schools that do not teach but graduate functional literates, about employment, house, homelessness, and tens of thousands of Blacks who have never held a job, about the staggering increase of families headed by single women, about violent crimes where Blacks are both the principal victims as well as the perpetrators. But the idea of a monolithic black America in every real has become artificial since the civil rights movement. While it implies a unified community that defies today's adversity, the images presented by it are both jarring and inconsistent. On one hand, as of this writing, The Cosby Show is top rated. Brian Gumbel and Oprah Winfrey are among the most respected hosts of morning network shows and talk programs, and an ever-growing number of blacks have grasped keys to power in spectacular fashion. Dr. Clifford Wharton saw race as no burden as he assumed his rightful place to head the nation's largest pension fund. Colin Powell, who, like Hannibal and Henry Flipper, Paragons, had gone before him, beat back the odds to become America's first soldier. All her life, Spelman College, Juanita Cole, had to elbow her way to the table. Now she is a black woman for greatness. "Show me someone content with mediocrity," she said, "and I'll show you someone destined for failure." And Ron Brown, the chairman of the National Democratic Party, is an agent of historical change. Throughout his life, he had his sidestep barriers constructed to defeat him. "My goal," he says unapologetically, "is to make it more difficult for people to say but." These men and women believe that life was meant to be more than a continuous struggle, a challenge to be met by working a little harder than was necessary, by carrying themselves one step further than what was required, and by proving, if proof was still necessary, that the actualized power of their potential was greater than any measure of racism which sought to restrain them. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the proportion of black professionals and managers has doubled since 1960. Also, black poverty, as an official measure by the Joint Studies, has declined by nearly one half. Blacks as a whole have moved from a position of utter destitution in terms of wealth, education, and human rights to a place alongside their ethnic counterparts, though none have had to come from so far back to join the ranks. On the other hand, however, some appalling trends still cloud these gains. Consider the following facts. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, the proportion of black children born out of wedlock in 1989 was nearly 60%. More than half of all black children are reared in fatherless homes. 31% of black Americans live in poverty. 45% of black children live in families with incomes below the poverty line. The black unemployment rate is twice that of whites and Asians. For every black earning $36,000, there are 12 blacks living below the poverty line. The 8,000 or so black Americans who lost their lives due to black-on-black violence in 1989 is equal to the number of black servicemen killed during the entire Vietnam conflict, according to the Atlantic Journal Constitution. Black males particularly have edged precariously close to becoming an endangered species. More than 40% of inmates in federal and state prisons are black. There are more black males in prison and correctional facilities than on college campuses. A Carnegie Foundation report states that black high school dropout rate in many urban areas exceeds 40%. In some inner cities, the rate is more than 50%. The President's National Commission for Excellence in Education reported that 44% of black 17-year-olds are functionally illiterate. And consider the findings from University of Chicago study as it was submitted to the government agency for public policy. By the year 2000, and we're in 2017, 70% of all black men will be unemployed, 70% of all black children will be born into households without a male, and roughly one-third of all blacks will be members of a permanent underclass. Add this to the explosion of drug abuse and swollen welfare rolls, and pretty soon the statistics become almost unimaginable. These conditions are both a waste of human potential and a drain on our national economy. Those who set social policy indulge themselves in demagogic game of finger-pointing. Liberals say conservatives won't spend enough on social programs. Conservatives reply, we've already spent too much and the programs don't work. Many argue that government is principally responsible, though these responses possess some element of truth. They fall far short of providing real solutions. In a very real sense, the civil rights struggle envisioned by its founders and millions of supporters has won some enormous battles. Blacks are no longer denied access to the judicial process of impartial hearings, speedy trials, and jury by peers. They are no longer denied access to public schools and colleges due to race, nor are they denied access to the political arena. As of this writing, blacks now serve as the chief executive office in the largest cities, New York, Los Angeles, Newark, Cleveland, Kansas City, New Orleans, Seattle, Baltimore, Detroit, Philadelphia, and Atlanta, as well as in the state of Virginia. On the national level, growing numbers of black candidates had added to their already impressive legions within American political and economic structures. But life is not sociology. It will not be given consideration here. Hill was deeply concerned with the aim of the common man. He committed the words of the great American naturalist Henry David Thoreau to memory. In the long run, men only hit at what they aim. Therefore, though they should fail immediately, it's best that they aim at something high. So make sure that you're aiming for something high, people. The 500 or so achievers highlighted in Hill's Law of Success represented but a small fraction of those whose personal success demonstrated the veracity of Hill's principles. As Hill asserted on numerous occasions, I have never known anyone who was inspired to use the secret who did not achieve noteworthy success in his calling. I have never known any person to distinguish himself or accumulate riches of any consequence without possession of these secrets. From these two facts, I draw the conclusion that the secret is more important as a part of knowledge essential for self-determination than any which is received through what is properly known as education. It was Hill's dream that black America would discover the infinite possibilities that are available to all who inhabit this world. It was his hope and desire that the time-tested principles that he worked so hard to uncover would be available in practice by anyone who wished to stamp their mark on society. Hill also stressed that anyone can reach a high level of personal achievement and through individual initiative can motivate himself or herself to greatness. It boils down to the choices one is willing to make. Okay, we're winding down on this introduction part. We'll take again and take a break here a second, take a little short pause, stretch, and read these last couple of pages of the introduction. And like I said, we will do chapter one next week. Okay, the last part is introduction. Is racial oppression and discrimination an insurmountable obstacle? As I pen my thoughts, I can hear a chorus of buts. But you don't understand the power of racism. But you underestimate 300 years of psychic despair that has been heaped upon our people. You're wrong. I do understand. Am I saying that racial oppression no longer exists? Discrimination has vanished from the American landscape? No. Yes, racism and discrimination do exist, and they will probably remain as constant. But, and this is a big but, they should never be an excuse for your lack of development. They should never be offered as a reason for your failure to dream, to strive, and press forward. When you encounter injustices and social wrongs, you must fight them tooth and nail. But you must never, never lose sight of the great battle to develop as an individual. Challenge for each black American, and it's a difficult one, is the same as it is always been. Not to go through life as a victim, but to live victoriously. You need to be motivated. You need to meditate upon the words shared by the Reverend Dr. Johnny Coleman, pastor of Christ Universal Complex in Chicago, one of the nation's largest churches, who teaches you don't have to be sick or broke. You can go within and bring forth the power to change things. Or better yet, be still as you consider the thoughts expressed by Dorothy Hike, president of the National Council of Negro Women, who for more than 40 years ago dared to ask the question, what makes, has she found the answer? I let you, the reader, decide. Greatness is not measured by what a man or woman accomplished, she says, but by the opposition he or she has overcome to reach his goals. Yes, even in 1991, America, it can still hurt to walk a mile in the shoes of a black American. But can racism or discrimination stop the man or woman on the move? As illustrations in this book will attest, never. All right, we're getting down to the last page here, or the introduction. A promise to the reader. For many years, I searched for a clue that would foretell the future for human beings. Is there a clue I wanted to know that could predict the future of bright promises? Is there a key that would guarantee a person's becoming successful? If he only knew about it and knew how to use it. Well, there is such a key, and I found it. Why do some people succeed in life while others fail? I will share that answer with you. This answer, if you really understood it, will alter your life immediately. If you understand completely what I'm about to tell you, from this moment on, your life will never be the same. You will suddenly find that good luck just seems to fall in line. And from now on, you won't have the problems, the worries, or the anxiety that you may have carried, like some extra baggage. Doubt and fear will be things of the past. And this book lies the key to success as well as the key to failure. A final word of warning before you digest the first chapter. Ignorance is no longer an adequate excuse for failure. Why? Because virtually all limitations are self-imposed. You will soon realize that you, the individual, are a minute expression of the Creator of all things, and as such, you have no limitations except those accepted in your own mind. Every man and woman has within himself or herself a sleeping giant. No one needs to be less than he or she is. There rests within each of us the power to become great, each in our own way. Finding one's true self is the beginning of success, simply as it is. Simple as it sounds, true inner self and meaning of life. They are ingredients like pieces of a puzzle waiting to be placed by you into one breathtaking work of art. This process can and must be learned. It is your responsibility in the final analysis to overcome ignorance. This can only be accomplished if you remain receptive and teachable. Last part of the introduction, special instructions. As you read this book, read it as if I were a personal friend writing to you and you alone. For this book is dedicated to you who seek the true riches of life. Read it again and again, and you refresh your understanding of it. Underscore sentences, quotations, and words that are meaningful to you. Memorize self-motivators. Call on it as often as you will eventually read much between the lines, which each new reading you will see what lies behind each statement. Each of the following chapters contains a secret that is essential to your progress toward your goals and desires. And after you have digested all and understood all, comprehend all, and put all into action, make your choice. You will know beyond a shadow of a doubt that there is no reason for you to be held back any longer. Through this book, you will discover that success in life can be predicted with absolute certainty. You can have the desires of your heart, all of them, and you will have them if you make this manual a part of your life of thinking, a part of your way of life. Let me paint a clear picture. If I gave the blueprint to a skillful builder, do you think it would be a matter of chance or luck that he will complete the structure according to the plan? Of course not. The builder merely starts at the beginning and follows the plan step by step to its completion. Think and Grow Rich, a Black Choice, shares the same concept. It is a blueprint for success. If you follow the instructions outlined in this book, the results will be automatic. You'll suddenly realize that you are capable of achieving far more, doing far more, and having far more than you ever thought possible. And you will realize your potential simply by applying the secrets that lie within these pages. Now the choice is yours. You can choose mediocrity or complacency with its companion, failure, or you can choose success. Which will you choose? When you turn the page, we will get to chapter one, which we will go over next week, Inner Space, the Final Frontier. Inner Space, the Final Frontier, the first chapter of the book. And we will be going over that next Wednesday at 3 o'clock. I thank you for tuning in today here on Blog Talk Radio on Home Based Business 101. And thank you for listening to my reading of the foreword and the introduction of Thinking, Grow Rich, A Black Choice. Hope this has been helpful for those that's looking for motivation and also for those who are rereading the book and going through what the book can do for them. Until next time, this has been Baba Jahi. God bless. Have a great day.